The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is Gary Heasley. I'm sitting in for Don Beischel, who is out today. James Jones is going to be with me here in the studio today, and if you'd like to join the conversation, please do. You can reach us by dialing 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306 if you would like to join the conversation. And, you know, kicking off in a world where we have so much that is so important to talk about, you know, we've always got a lot to cover, and today is no exception. For those that saw this recent thing where Anthony Blinken was over at a NATO conference talking about Ukraine, and it certainly brings up and brings to mind the issues with Ukraine. You know, how did we get here, and where is this going? When you hear Blinken, our Secretary of State, or anyone in the government speak about Ukraine, they speak about it with such passion. They're so passionate about their desire to go to war with Russia that nothing else comes close to being as important as that. And of course, that includes the well-being and prosperity of American citizens. It includes defending the United States border. Nothing that's on the federal government's list of tasks to complete comes close to the importance of Ukraine. That seems odd to me. I don't understand how we've gotten to a world where we're told that if the Congress doesn't fund billions and billions of untraceable dollars that flood into Ukraine and get laundered all about, that somehow they'll refuse to defend the border. It seems upside down, doesn't it? Isn't their first and most important priority defending the United States of America? Well, it should be. It's not. And so we of course heard the president, or whatever he is, Joe Biden, at the State of the Union address speak about Ukraine. And it was interesting because it was in the first minute of his hour-long State of the Union address that he brings up Ukraine. It is clearly, again, the highest priority for the government. In fact, why don't we listen just to a little bit of what he had to say?
If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not. Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that it needs to defend itself. Now,
why does he say that Putin will not stop at Ukraine? It's been since the early 90s that the Soviet Union has fallen, and Putin's never been interested in going past the borders that he's got. I mean, there, of course, has been conflict in Georgia, and now we've had this extended conflict in Ukraine. But even where did that come from? And if we go back all the way to the early 90s, when the Soviet Union finally fell, and as Reagan asked, they did tear down that wall. What was left in its wake throughout Ukraine and throughout many of the other Soviet satellites, what was left were chemical, bioweapon, and nuclear facilities, but there was no money to take care of it. If you've ever spoken to someone who lived in the Soviet Union outside of Russia at the fall of the Soviet Union, they'll explain how just one day all the money dried up. Their pensions quit getting paid. Their salaries weren't paid. There were factories that had equipment. People went to work and found that all the equipment had been moved out overnight and taken back to Russia. The Soviet Union, when it collapsed, did so in a very hurried fashion and left in its wake an incredible amount of uncertainty and instability. So much so that there was, if you remember, even a discussion about who owned the Black Sea fleet. Ukraine trying to lay claim to the fleet. Of course, Russia saying, you know, we've had a base at Sevastopol for many, many years, and that's our fleet, and we're not going to let you take it. But nevertheless, Ukraine ended up with some assets and a base right next door to Sevastopol. And And if you remember, there were actually a large number of Soviet-era aircraft, fighter jets, MiGs, that were in inventory that were in Ukraine. And one of the things Ukrainians did to make money was actually sell off those aircraft. I know someone who purchased a MiG fighter jet from Ukraine after the fall of the Soviet Union. And it was fascinating. They of course, had the weaponry taken off. And this gentleman would fly around the United States in his MiG, getting interesting responses from aircraft nearby and from control towers. But the people in Ukraine had access to these things, and they decided to monetize them. Of course, the greater threat was monetization of whatever was in those biochemical and nuclear labs. So a group was formed under the Pentagon called the Defense Threat Reduction Act, DITRA. And DITRA was formed with what was at the time seemingly a great idea, which was they were going to mitigate the potential damage that could come out of these chemical, bio, and nuclear facilities. They were going to dismantle them. They were going to put hazardous materials into safe storage or in whatever ways necessary, remediate the risks associated with these chemical, bioweapon, and nuclear plants. Unfortunately, that's not what happened either, because, of course, that mission could have been completed in a certain number of years. But what in fact happened was the Department of Defense and the Pentagon continued to invest in those bioweapon labs. In fact, outside of Tbilisi in Georgia, there's a bioweapon lab, or I guess you'd just say a biological research facility, which is impossible to differentiate between one that is bioweapons and one that is not bioweapons. They're working on the same stuff. But there's one outside of Tbilisi in Georgia that's known as the Richard Lugar facility. It's named after the senator that helped secure the funding. I think that lab cost $109 million when it was built. So rather than mitigate the issues related to these chemical, biological, and nuclear facilities, the United States invested in those. The Pentagon continued to operate those labs. And what we ended up with on Russia's door were biolabs throughout the Ukraine and other countries that were dealing with very, very dangerous materials. And in some of these facilities, in order to get into them, you had to have a U.S. passport. These weren't domestic facilities. They were United States operations. So as we lead into the Ukraine invasion by Russia, one of the things that Putin said that Russia was concerned about were, of course, biolabs. And our government said there are no biolabs. And this went back and forth for a while until finally they agreed and admitted that, in fact, there were biolabs and that these DITRA facilities had been kept in place and they're still operating. And of course, there were other issues that led to this. And for those that have paid close attention, back in 2014, there was the second color revolution that was facilitated, most believed, by the United States in Ukraine, where the Ukrainians had elected an administration that the U.S. government didn't like. So the U.S. government, led by this woman, Victoria Nuland, committed a coup, flipped that out. A lot of people were killed in that coup, and replaced that with a more friendly government that would follow the leadership of the U.S., NATO, the World Bank, and the IMF. So that was a move to pull the sphere of influence in Ukraine away from Russia and increase the influence from Europe and the United States. As a geopolitical move, of course, that makes sense. But you can see how these things begin to build up. And of course, from 2014 to 2022, there was the War of the Donbass, where somewhere between 14 and 20,000 Ukrainians were killed. That was funded by all accounts, the United States and NATO, executed by paramilitary and Ukrainians on one side and people in the Donbass and Russia on the other. And, you know, this war raged for 8 years. And, of course, the Russian language was outlawed and so on. Now, I've been to Ukraine. It's a great country. The people are fantastic. It's a wonderful place to go, or was. But at this point, Ukraine has been reduced to rubble. The constant expansion of NATO, the constant push to expand the European Union, and to take NATO right up to Russia's border is clearly part of the reason this war happened. So it's nice and comfortable for us to sit back and just think that we have no part in this and that Putin was just sort of a lunatic that woke up one morning and decided he's going to invade a country because he had nothing better to do. And, you know, he was going to somehow then go through that country and take on NATO. Now, to put that in context, Leading into the war, Russia's annual military budget is something in the neighborhood of $65 billion. The United States is now spending $1 trillion on defense. NATO collectively is about $1.4 trillion. So we're talking about a country that has, well, of course, a war-footing economy and experienced troops and a serious nuclear capability and a serious military capability. But to take on the $1.4 trillion war machine of NATO would be a bit of a serious task. And of course, well, Biden, who has never been right about anything on geopolitical matters, continues to say that somehow Russia was going to invade NATO countries. There's been never any indication of that really being true. So is this just propaganda to get us to support laundering billions and billions and billions of dollars through the Ukrainian battlefield while Ukrainians are dying and Ukraine is being destroyed? Is that what this is really about? Because it seems to be what that's about when you tell me that the U.S. government refuses to defend the United States border because their priority is the Ukrainian border. Now, I don't want to see Ukraine suffer any further than it has. Hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers dead. You know, this is a disaster for Ukraine. They've wiped out a generation of men that, won't be replaced. This is a catastrophic outcome. Remember, Ukraine's about 40 million people. Russia's about 140 million people. They're dramatically different in size. And, of course, Russia is a much more formidable war maker, you know, much more formidable military force. So when you think about how this comes out, it's difficult to see how Ukraine ever could have won this war. And it's difficult to imagine why we think pumping billions of dollars into that is really our priority. And it's even more difficult to understand why our government refuses to fulfill its highest obligation and defend the United States border. But they don't. Now, you know, to put that in context, as most everyone knows by now, we've lost about 350,000 Americans in the last 3 years to fentanyl and xylazine and heroin. But these drugs that are being brought into the country by the folks that control our border, the cartels, and distributed throughout the nation by the people who control our border, the cartels. This is absolutely unbelievable to, at least to me, that we've got 350,000 dead Americans and our government continues to refuse to act. And frankly, that it's not a bigger scandal, that we don't have every single Republican and every Democrat running around screaming that we must defend the border. And anybody who thinks that it's not an invasion, of course, those are people that are not very well informed. Every town is a border town. By now, most people know about the 320,000 to 1.4 million. It's not clear exactly how many people have been ferried in by aircraft by the State Department into the United States by whomever is flying these secret jets, these secret flights. You know, they're flying these illegal aliens in. We're at least 10 million have come in the time of the Biden administration being in place. It is clearly an invasion. And everyone knows that it's tens of thousands of military age, extremely fit, single men coming in from China. Now, if I was sitting in China, I would take advantage of the United States being hyper-focused on places like Ukraine and not at all interested in defending its own borders. And I would push as many soldiers into this country as I could right now. I mean, could you imagine an easier way to infiltrate your enemy than to have your enemy pay for those people to be infiltrated, to clear them before they get to the border through an app that the Department of State has, to bring them in, hand them housing and food, transport them around the nation? There is no better way to invade a country than to have that country pay for your people to invade it. But while we're paying for our own invasion, we're also supposed to be paying to stop the war in Ukraine. And when you go through the bio labs, the expansion of NATO, which we had promised not to do, the war in the Donbass, which we helped support, the push for this, you have to ask yourself, why are we doing this? We are not clean on this war in Ukraine. And now that the nation is virtually destroyed, we continue to push it. It was in April of 2022 that there was a chance for a negotiated peace between Russia and Ukraine. And let's be clear, if the Donbass region that has been under assault for 8 years prior to this war, if that became an independent region, that has no strategic implications of importance to the United States. I mean, that's their issue, not our issue. I'm much more concerned with keeping Texas safe than I am with keeping the Donbass out of an influence, out of the influence of the Russians. It just doesn't make sense that our issue is over there. Now, that said, then we have to ask ourselves, why are we doing this? Is this really about Ukraine? Or is the ultimate goal actually for the globalists who control our military, who control our State Department, who control our federal government, for those globalists and their allies around the world to get control of Russia? Because what we've heard since day one of this is that Putin's a bad guy. He has to be taken out. We have to remove Putin. Because there's no, this war between Ukraine and Russia ended when the counteroffensive failed and something in the neighborhood of 70,000 Ukrainians were killed in the counteroffensive that was done as soon as the ground was firm enough to fight. There's no hope of Ukraine winning this war without having NATO military on the ground in that country. Are we prepared for that? And why are we doing that? Is the ultimate goal simply to give the globalists control of the resources, the land, and the people of Russia? We're not fighting this over Ukraine. That would have been settled in April of 22. That would have been settled before the war began. All indications are that we're fighting this not on behalf of the American people, who have no vested interest. I don't know anybody who's walking around that doesn't have relatives or family members or an interest, a personal interest in Ukraine, who's running around saying, you know, it's imperative that we move troops into Ukraine. But there is no chance that the Ukrainian military pushes Russia out without getting troops in place from NATO. It's not going to happen. This war is already over unless we further escalate. Is America willing and ready to deploy troops into Ukraine? Well, that's a question I think we may end up having to answer. Now, Secretary Blinken was just over talking about Ukraine, and you know, he made some comments, and I think we should listen to those now.
Ukraine, the determination of every country represented here at NATO remains rock solid. We'll do everything that we can. Allies will do everything that they can to ensure that Ukraine has what it needs to continue to deal with Russia's ongoing aggression against Ukraine, an aggression that gets worse with every passing day. Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Our purpose at the summit is to help build a bridge to that membership and to create a clear pathway for Ukraine moving forward.
Of course, we believe that Ukraine deserves to be a member of NATO and that this should happen sooner rather than later.
Now, I don't understand a couple of things. Of course, as I said earlier, I don't understand why Anthony Blinken, Mayorkas, and the rest of the Democrat administration refuse to defend the United States border. I further don't understand why it is in our interest, and I'm talking about the American people, why is it in the American people's interest to have Sweden, Finland, and Ukraine join NATO? What is the purpose of that? NATO was formed to be a countermeasure against the Soviet Union. Soviet Union fell in 1991. We've seen no aggression by Russia into NATO countries. We look at NATO and we realize that NATO's greatest function, it seems, is to collect and spend money. You know, it was a few years ago, maybe 5-6 years ago, a report came out that said that in the event of a Russian aggression against Poland, if that were to happen, not that there was an indication it would, but NATO would not have been able to move troops from NATO countries to the Polish border to defend Poland. They didn't have the trucks and the planes to do that. In fact, it would be the United States that would have to send all of the gear over to move troops to the border to defend Poland. In other words, NATO is a dependency on the United States. The NATO countries are protectorates. We take care of them. Now, we know that the U.S. has funded the bulk of the military expenditures. We know that we have delivered all the equipment to the, not all, but much of the equipment to NATO countries. They're grossly underspending on defense because they don't have to worry about it because the United States is now spending $1 trillion a year on defense. They've never had to worry about it because we have this unlimited checkbook that has now resulted in $34 trillion of debt. Is there a limit to what we will spend on Europe's defense? And that raises the question, then, why isn't Europe up in arms to go defend NATO? I'm telling you, you talk to somebody from Germany, they will tell you no one in Germany intends to go fight in Ukraine. Nobody. And yet here in the United States, we now have seen retired military getting called up to service. We know that recruiting numbers are abysmally low. Well, who could go sign on to be led by the likes of Blinken, Mayorkas, Janet Yellen, Biden, these people, who would sign on to be led by them? Leadership matters. We have a volunteer army. Our volunteer military has to sign up. And one of the reasons they do so is because they trust in leadership. That's why robust recruiting was happening under Donald Trump and is no longer happening. So now you've got Blinken saying it's imperative that Ukraine be part of NATO. If Ukraine becomes part of NATO and it's at war with Russia, then by virtue of Article 5, NATO's at war with Russia. Not in this clandestine way we have been. No one in the world is confused and thinks that Ukraine has attacked the Crimean Bridge twice, took out the pipeline, Nord Stream pipeline. Nobody is confused and thinks that that Ukraine by themselves attacked the concert hall. Nobody is confused and thinks that the United States hasn't been helping them do these things like attacking the oil refineries in Russia. So we're at war now. NATO's at war with Russia now. But if Ukraine joins, then the facade that we are not directly engaged in war with Russia in an attempt to crush Russia to replace their leadership, that facade falls away and it's now direct military conflict with the United States and NATO military against the Russian military and whatever military joins Russia in that fight. It is, in fact, the next escalation of World War III. We're in World War III. This is when World War III goes super hot. So the question that we have to keep asking, how is this in the interest of the American people? What is the American people's vested interest in seeing this? And frankly, what's the Ukrainian people's vested interest in seeing this? I understand. Look, there's been a lot of money made in this war. This Zelensky has made huge piles of money. The former minister of war or minister of defense in Ukraine went and bought a beautiful $7 million luxury estate in Spain. Not in Ukraine, in Spain. Where'd he get that money? Yeah, that came from you. So I understand the imperative to the people who are collecting the money. We know about the money that went from the U.S. Treasury to the Ukraine Treasury, from the Ukraine Treasury to FTX, and then from FTX back to United States politicians. That's all documented. So I understand the imperative to launder money for those that can get their cut. I don't understand how that is in some way benefiting Joe and Jane Main Street and why this war can't be negotiated to a settlement. And if we're going down the path we're going down, where we're recalling retired military personnel, where we are continuously pushing this warmongering language like Blinken just used, what's the next step? Are we going to war? Now, one of the people who's been commenting on this and taking the opposing side from the globalists is a guy named Colonel Douglas McGregor. And McGregor is saying many of the things that we've talked about here. In fact, why don't we take a moment and just listen to some of what Colonel McGregor has to say?
Well, for the globalists that are running the show, this is the globalist neocon elite, and both on the Hill as well as in the White House, and these elites in Europe, particularly in Paris, Berlin, London, they're all interested in seeing BlackRock take over Ukraine, number one, so that it can be systematically stripped of its resources and turned into a subjugated state that belongs to the larger globalist elites. But they also want to see that happen to Russia, which is why this war was never about Ukraine. It was always about what can be done to destroy Russia. And of course, since the people in charge didn't perform any strategic analysis, they never thought about purpose, method, or end state, they concluded that Russia today is still the Russia of 1992. It's weak. It's prostrate. Its economy is ineffective. Remember the McCain statement? Oh, Russia is Spain with a gas station? All of these arrogant displays of American hubris, treating Russia as though it was a third-class nation with a fourth-class military. Well, we're getting an education right now. We paid no attention to the Russians who had legitimate concerns about what we were doing in eastern Ukraine. We were building an army to attack them. We put a hostile government into that country in 2014, and we kept telling them that it made no difference to us what they thought or what they cared about. They said, we don't want NATO on our border. No one paid attention.
You know, when you look at the causes of this war, and now you look at where we're going, I think McGregor's comments start to make more and more sense. Why are we prosecuting this war? Why is it our highest priority? Why are we not concerned about what's happening in the United States, where we're stacking up dead bodies from fentanyl and murders by illegal aliens. We talked about some of the victims last week. You know, this President Biden character misquoted someone's name during the State of the Union, a woman who had just been killed, but she was just one of many that have been killed. I had a report this morning of an illegal alien who raped a child, and this was in Massachusetts, and was given bail by a judge who's a very aggressive activist. He went and got on an airplane and flew away. He's never seen again. He will not be held accountable for that. An American citizen does not have that freedom. In fact, American citizens don't have a lot of the benefits of being an illegal alien. So what are we fighting this war for? How much money do we have to pump into this thing so that more villas in the south of Spain can be purchased, so that Blinken maybe gets another house in addition to the one he has in Florida, maybe needs a bigger house? How many dollars do we have to send over there so that U.S. Elected officials can get donations into their campaign funds? I don't know who does it now that the FTX scam fell apart. So the problem we have is that we've got a government that's really not at all focused in any way at the interest of its people. It is solely focused on the interests of the globalists it serves. James, you've listened to some of this. What are your thoughts?
Well, Gary, first of all, it's good seeing you. Good being with you again. And I think you're certainly hitting the target of what has taken place so far in the last 3 years of the Biden administration. Yes, there's a border crisis, and it's sad to see that America is not willing to have that very difficult conversation about why are we allowing all these people to cross our borders without any type of verification checks. Yet, when we decide, we as Americans decide to leave our country, we have to have positive identification, passports. We have to have virtually everything under the sun just to prove who we are before we can board a plane or go through any of our ports of entry. I think that's a sad day in America because we've allowed this administration to demonstrate its poor leadership skills. Yes, I can say that when President Trump was in office, he did a lot to protect our borders. And I do believe in his next term, how do you like that? I believe in his next term, he will hold the border countries accountable for their action. For example, Gary, not long ago, President of Mexico, Obrador, made a comment that he was not going to enforce America's foreign policies and trying to restrain people from crossing those borders. Now, I thought, listen, here it is, this guy, we have his people coming here to America, his people being from Mexico. They're coming to America, fleeing his country, as well as other North American and South American countries. They're fleeing there because they want to find a better life. And we have an administration who says, wait a minute, let me capitalize upon that weakness. Let me bring these people in. Let me sugarcoat their landing so they can get on buses and at the border towns and they can travel all across America. We give them a little wristband. We give them a cell phone. We give them a credit card with a few dollars on it so they can make their way back to court just so that we'll know that they're coming and that we can get them some type of a citizenship. It is an invasion, Gary. You said that so clearly. It is an invasion, and our government is doing nothing about it. We need to take actions from every state, executing all the 10th amendments of the U.S. Constitution to protect our borders. And you're right. Every state now is finding themselves being a border state. I love the fact that we have many conservative governors who are falling in line and saying, we're going to go down there to support Governor Abbott in Texas. I love seeing and hearing that because it says we are one. We are one United States, and we are not going to be moved around by a president or even this Secretary Antony Blinken, who they're trying to score brownie points. For what reason? I have no idea, because it's hurting the rest of us as American, as you mentioned earlier, Gary, about a $34 trillion debt. We're not having those tough conversations with these political folks, guys. We should be ringing their bells, our congressmen and women. We should be ringing their doors, ringing their phones, having town hall meetings, asking and demanding them to do something about it.
I never thought we would get to $34 trillion in debt.
I never did either.
I assumed this machine would be shut down long ago. And now you're looking at everybody now. It's commonplace on the street that people know it's $1 trillion every 100 days. $1 trillion? We have to refinance.
Yeah, well, you know what? Refinancing and printing more money, the dollar is not backed against anything at all. And I'm glad you mentioned that too, Gary, because I just read an article this morning where President Putin in Russia, he's planning on pushing, think about maybe $241.6 billion to help with BRICS. They want to eliminate the U.S. dollar, which has been in place for quite a while, for all commodities or any swift exchange of dollars.
Right. Yeah.
They're doing everything they can with BRICS, such as, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa.
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia.
I mean, that group now, as of January of this year, has gotten so large that BRICS countries control 60% of the world's oil supply.
I believe that.
60%.
Yes.
So what we've done is taken close allies and with these economic sanctions, pushed them away. And now they're looking to say, why should I continue to depend on the American dollar as my reserve currency? By the way, why should I continue to buy this American debt? Both Japan and China have been removing or rather reducing their exposure to U.S. debt since 2015. They haven't been actively buying our debt since 2015. They're getting out of that business. I actually wonder if one of the conversations Yellen's going to have on this trip is to get China to buy some of this debt. This $11 trillion we have to either refinance or newly issue this year. Are the markets prepared for that?
Well, you know, I think, Gary, quite frankly, the reason America will fail to hold China accountable for any actions such as a sanction, for example, because they hold so much of our debt. You know, we're indebted to them. And that's why we have a president who says, all right, let me let my son make a few dollars on the side and let me go over there and make sure that President Xi is not too aggressive there with Taiwan and that they don't tie up the straits. And let's make sure that we're not being too intimidating as a dove to go to President Xi and let him know that we are a country that has stood the test of time, and we're not going to enter into World War III unless we're the winners. We don't have that kind of leadership right now. When Biden meets with the President Xi of China, you know, he goes there bowing like a coward. You know, it's like he's defeated. I mean, if he's not falling over, but he's bowing like he's defeated already before the conversation takes place. And President Xi is a big, strong man, and we have this little weak guy who's happened to be a senior citizen, but he's not demonstrating any kind of leadership.
He wasn't capable before he was a senior citizen. 30 years ago, Biden wasn't capable of this job.
Not at all.
And it really, you know, it's always interesting when I'm in any kind of a group and I ask the question, who's making policy decisions? Domestic or foreign policy? The answer is never Biden. No one believes it's him.
Yeah.
He is simply an empty face behind which this globalist machine is running. Now, Yellen's in China right now, right?
Yeah, where she is.
So here's what she's saying. This is Yellen now apparently trying to stand up to China the way Trump did. She said that China's too large to try to export its way to rapid growth.
Come on.
She was chair of the Fed. This is a 40 year issue. It's incredible. It's currently leading to production capacity that significantly exceeds China's domestic demand. This is ridiculous for Janet Yellen, a former Fed chair, you know, 3 years now as Secretary of the Treasury, and she's going over to China to make statements that average citizens on the street knew 25, 35, 40 years ago. This is ridiculous. It's no reason. It is no wonder that no one takes us seriously, not only the quagmire in Ukraine, but this economic disaster that these people are cooking up.
Yeah, you mentioned about military recruitment and how it's down 20, 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And recently I saw China's military marching. I mean, I don't know, it was just a show of force, but they were looking good. I mean, letter sharp. I mean, I'm a military man, and I know there are many others probably in our listening audience who are military people or families. But when you stop and look at our military, who have people that are representing us in uniform, and they're disrespecting our uniform because, you know, we've got so many social programs that are dominating the military more so than our military strength. We're looking at how we can have conversions from people who signed up as a man and now they want the surgery to become a woman and yet they're still there in office. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. We are showing weakness in the international community. And every time, Gary, every time I'm on a conversation with the international clients that I deal with,
mm-hmm.
to include just before I came here today.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are always got some question to ask about what's going on in America. And they love to hear that Donald Trump is managing his legal matters in such a manner that he is. They love hearing that because they are saying, we want to see President Trump back in office again. We as the international community, these are business people. We want to see, and the oil industry is suffering so greatly, they're saying we know that he can come back in and make it very competitive in the global community. He will do that.
He can restabilize.
He can restabilize.
These people depend on a stable United States to have a stable trading platform internationally, globally. And without do you think any of these folks that are trading global commodities want to be subject to the whims of the CCP?
No.
I mean,
no.
It's preposterous. Oh. But if we're no better because we're willing to use the United States Foreign Service, trade policy, and military simply to generate money for these corrupt globalists mm-hmm. and to give them more power and leverage in foreign countries that, frankly, they have no business owning.
But Gary, they don't follow through with worthwhile conversations that are difficult to talk about. They want to be mansy-pansy. So they don't want to go out there and talk to Russia or talk to Saudi Arabia in a manner that needs to be dealt with or hold them accountable for what they're doing to things that harm or hurt us. And then we got this guy who says, okay, we're going to put in 3 million barrels of crude oil inside the strategic reserve, and then he cancels it at the last minute. Well, and so now all of a sudden the global community is saying, what is going on in America?
The global community has been saying that for a long time.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
And Americans are starting to say it, which is a good thing, because up to now, the American public's been so asleep that they've let all this happen. And you might talk to someone in a foreign country who's going to ask a question, but the American people seem to have just quietly accepted it all.
I know. That's the part that really upsets me, to see so many patriots, so many Americans, so many people who fought for freedom just as I did and before me. Now we're looking at, it's time to pony up. Guys, get up off your backside and do something about it. It's time to pony up and hold this government that we're living with right now, and hopefully we won't have to live with it after November of 2024, but we have to hold them accountable. The American people has an interest, and we got to be able to demonstrate that. We have to hold them accountable from every walk of life. And folks, if you're not familiar with me, I say go into communities that you've never gone into before. Talk to people and talk about the borders. Ask people, why do they think that, as you mentioned earlier, Gary, about the cartels who are sending over sex slaves, they're sending over mules. Now they're using drones to be able to make sure that they got people who can clear the borders successfully. We need to identify those guys as terrorists and label them as terrorists, track them down as terrorists, kill them as terrorists, because that's what they're doing to us. You mentioned some magical numbers, and I thought, my God, 300,000 people killed on fentanyl, and they're getting it straight across that border because we don't have that education to build it in America.
We know where fentanyl is coming from. It's
Absolutely.
Coming from China to the cartels to the United States. It is a chemical weapon, and it's being used as a chemical weapon. We know this.
That supply chain works for them.
So here we have a situation where, you know, of course, everyone in our government knows it, and yet they refuse to take action. Why? Mm. Well, it's clear everything you just said supports this reality that we're in, that the government's interests are separate from those of the people. They're no longer beholden to the people. They have their own interests. Think about this. The Department of Education, how many schools does that thing run?
Mm.
Zero. How many students does it educate? Zero.
Right.
It's got at least 5,000 employees, and its annual budget now has reached $83 billion. $83 billion, they don't educate a single student. They don't have to worry about getting the money. A few years ago, they had requested $65 billion, and they got $73. So now at $83 billion, they don't run schools. Who are they working for? Well, they're working for themselves.
Well,
there is no congressional oversight. These hearings in the House show clearly that from Mayorkas to Christopher Wray, none of these federal officials looked to Congress with anything other than simple, disgust, maybe a little bit of humor. They may think they're funny, but there's absolutely no functioning oversight from Congress. So that is gone. And if the Democrats succeed and the, whoever it is that's causing Republicans to leave the House, if they succeed in getting the Republican majority reduced to below zero, then we're going to have Hakeem Jeffries as a speaker, and there will be no further discussion. So this federal government is not just operating without concern for the interests of its people. It has its own system. They're not dependent upon us. Look at the elections. There won't even be a primary for the Democrats for president. There'll be no primary for either party for Senate in Pennsylvania. Both parties selected a candidate, put it forward, and that's it. You have two choices, both selected by party insiders. It is clear that they feel no obligation to the voters, and then they go execute these wars without ever explaining why it's in our interest. They've never explained why this war had to happen, why it's so imperative that we expand NATO, why the EU has to be right up to Russia's border, why we have to have bio labs in Russia, why they lied to us about it for, what was it, a year or so before they admitted they were there?
Oh, I hate the fact that we did not have any discussions on the pullout in Afghanistan when we caused so many people to be harmed and still trying to come out of that place. We still have Americans on the ground in Afghanistan because of Biden's decision without consulting his leadership. This is what we should do. And even if he did discuss it with his leadership, his ineptness, he just made the decision anyway.
Yeah, I'm guessing that he did discuss it with everybody, that they all talked about it, because there's no reason for them to do anything differently. Do you think they care about the soldiers, the U.S. soldiers that were killed at the airport when they were pulling out of bag? No, they don't care about that.
Now, you couldn't even say the lady's name who was killed by the illegal immigrants.
These things just don't matter to them. You know, so this divide in interest is critical. And I think we are at this point where the American people are going to have to start thinking through this Ukraine thing. If this war is to continue, we are going to have to send in NATO troops. France said they were going to send troops into Odessa. To my knowledge, that hasn't yet happened.
No, they said that last week.
They said it last week.
Right.
Now you got Blinken saying we're going to make NATO, or we're going to make Ukraine part of NATO. He said that these last few days. This is all recent. So you see them ramping up. We don't have the military preparedness to take on this war.
No.
We have spent our stockpiles. Now, the issue of making money after the war, you may know who Penny Pritzker is. She's the sister of the governor of Illinois. She's the heir, one of the many heirs to the Hyatt Hotel fortune. She and her siblings were born each having about a $3 billion trust fund. So she's been a billionaire since birth. And Penny Pritzker has been appointed to be the person who will manage the rebuilding of Ukraine. So you got a U.S. business person with deep ties to the Democrat Party, deep ties to the gender ideology movement. You know, the Pritzker group is one of the main reasons that the, you know, the books get into schools, for example. They're very, very active in this. She's got a brother who's now her sister, I think, or a sister that's now a brother, one of the two. And they are very, very active in pushing this hard. And she's going to be the one standing in the rubble of Ukraine to figure out who makes the most money over there. You know, the American people are going to have to finally stand up and make a decision and say, wait a minute. Do we want to continue to prosecute this war? Is it time to force an end? Is it time to allow the remaining Ukrainians to live and to allow that country to begin to stabilize? You know, how far are we willing to let these globalists push us into this battle?
You know, and let me take another approach on this as well, Gary. It's like we pick and choose what countries we want to lend support to. And I look at Haiti while we're having this conversation, I think, and reflect on how sad it is that Haiti had its internal problems where someone killed their president. And since that time, that country has fallen into a black hole and is continuing to spiral. So, yes, we've evacuated the embassies. Yes, we know that is a dangerous place to visit. And we have both military and civilians doing everything they can to evacuate Americans out of Haiti right now.
Right.
However, we could have done something for Haiti, we as America. And I'm saying that because it seems to me we have an administration who says, and he made this comment, and I really have a problem with that. He made a racist comment. Joe Biden made a racist comment, and it can be identified somewhere if he wants to sue me in court. I can handle that. He says you aren't black enough unless you vote for me. And now he's looking at a black country such as Haiti, and he makes the country look like you're not important to the rest of us. He has the young lady, what's her name? Jean-Pierre, whatever.
Jean-Pierre, something
yeah,
or other.
Yeah, she's Haitian. She's Haitian, and she's not bringing any of that to the attention of the president. And I'm saying this because how do we identify which issues that we want to address in the global community? How do we go through that process? Because I don't think Blinken is doing a very good job. Kamala Harris, she was appointed border czar when they first came in office. Unfortunately, she's never made her way down to the southern border. She's gone to other countries and said, why are you sending your people over here to the USA? What can we do to stop that? Well, wait a minute. All you're doing is on a vacation trip there with your husband because you're not doing anything that's affecting that border. You're not bringing any money or putting up any Constantine wires or that Tanglefoot that they got down there right now that other states have put out there and said, we're going to help curb the traffic down here in this place.
You know, it is unbelievable to me that we've got a country, Haiti, half of that Hispaniola island, that has been in this kind of turmoil for so many years. We've sent military into Haiti over and over and over again. It is next to the last big move we made in Haiti, I think, was the Clinton Foundation when they went down there to take all that money after the earthquakes.
Yes.
And of course, we know that children are trafficked out of Haiti, which seems to be a focus of this globalist population. You know, we've had a couple hundred thousand children trafficked into the United States since the Democrats took control of the White House. So how is it that we're spending, again, all this focus on Ukraine, a country that I really like, but we're going to pump billions and billions in there, and you've got a completely destabilized Haiti, and we are part of the reason it's destabilized. You can't be that close to the United States and be destabilized and not have us be part of it. If you look at our military history and all the invasion, you know, all of the times we've sent the military in to fix Haiti, it's not once. It's happened over and over again. So who are these people serving? Well, they're not serving us.
No, not at all. But here's the thing. The Clinton Foundation, I mean, they take money from many different foreign countries. Many. And it's, they can't track exactly where that money is coming from because it's a foundation. And what has happened, they have depleted all the natural resources from Haiti. But recently they found that Haiti does have a lot of oil in their soil. And so therefore, they're preventing anyone from going to do any kind of in-depth studies for an upstream research project to make it happen. But the Clinton Foundation has made billions of dollars collecting funds in the name of Haiti. And they've done nothing but strip it because I believe Hillary Clinton's brother was one of those who went over there and collected some type of valuable ore.
He was put on the board of a mining company.
Yes.
Having no experience in mining, no experience
Zero.
In Haiti.
Yes.
No reason to be on there except that he was there as a bag man.
Yes.
It is just like the Biden model.
Just like
And it's just like the rest of them. So we're in a situation where the government simply isn't serving its people. No. It's serving someone else. Well, part of the reason they've been able to do that is because while taxes have gone up, we haven't been forced to pay the bill for this. The $34, $35 trillion of debt, that's the deferral of the United States taxpayer actually having to pay for what its government is doing. And if you think about the way it's touched people, it really hasn't, you know, the invasion, if you've had one of the 350,000 or so that have died from fentanyl in your family, you've been touched by it, but you might not even connect it to the border invasion. Mm-hmm. You know, you might think it's just some random drug thing that's happening. You may not realize that the cartels have been given the franchise to run the border and they run these distribution networks nationwide, that Venezuelan gangs are now coming up to be a much more significant factor in the United States. You may not know any of that. But there is another thing happening right now where there are illegal gangs. There are gangs of illegal immigrants that are being trained and sent into the United States, and they're not breaking into the homes at the low end of the economic spectrum. They're going after the high-end homes. And a policeman recently did a press conference to talk about this. These are organized and trained groups.
I saw that.
And so if you listen to this guy and what he had to say, this police chief held a press conference talking about these trained groups that are breaking into
awesome.
High-end homes.
Yes.
Security video we've seen over the past 6 months is chilling enough. Unencumbered and well-equipped thieves knock out glass doors, disable the alarm system, and unconcerned, easily and frankly quite loudly slide a half-ton safe down a flight of stairs before carrying it off in a rental car.
They come in teams with backpacks. Each backpack has a different tool set. Some are the breaching tools, some are the electronics, jam alarm systems. Very quick, sophisticated actions.
Local, state, and federal officers went to work and put enough pressure on these thieves to head elsewhere. Yet they've cycled back from L.A., New York, Tennessee, and Ohio now, and more efficient than ever. Bouchard says the last group of alleged thieves arrested received training in Chile, and they're roving with dozens of others.
Now we know we have teams from Colombia, and New York intelligence has teams, like criminal gangs from Venezuela now.
It's fascinating, is it? And now these Venezuelan gangs are reportedly connecting up with MS-13. They're having a merger happen. These folks are becoming so powerful, and their presence is becoming so strong in the United States that it's getting to be at a point where the average citizen that has been avoiding any of these problems so far is going to feel them. And here we have these high-end homes where these trained gangs, these aren't just thugs from, you know, some street corner. These are folks that are trained, they have tools. And if you listen to what he said, they have tools to block your security system. So people that go in and put in these Simply Safe type systems that are Wi-Fi driven, they simply go in and block those. That stops you from having any of the video that you might want to get. And here's the thing from the FBI. This was on Fox News. FBI fears Venezuela migrant gang members could potentially team up with MS-13 killers. Now, anybody that knows anything about MS-13 knows that these people are truly animals. These are very, very violent people. This is another factor. I don't think the American population has any idea how violent these gangs from Mexico all the way down to Colombia are. I don't think they have any idea the kind of violence they're willing to bring. This isn't the mafia from the 1970s. This is a whole new level of violence. And now you've got these Venezuelan gangs that are beginning to get foundation here. Remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the National Guard New York looking for gang tattoos from Venezuela. We talked about the suburbs of Chicago where Venezuelan gangs, never before factor, are becoming a factor. Now you're going to have a merger with MS-13. They're going to have a partnership, a cooperative joint venture. The American people aren't prepared for this. And what we see now with this report from these police that was in Chicago is that the people living in the higher end communities who have been immune from all of this are now seeing it come to their door.
Gary, before we jump off this hour, I want to make a statement about something you said earlier about what took place in Haiti and with the child sex trafficking scheme taken on and with the Clinton Foundation having connections with that. I wish that we would have someone that would do one thing, investigate that Clinton Foundation to see how they were involved with the supply channel to the children who were being sexually exploited to Jeffrey Epstein on his island just before he was arrested. And the other thing I want to talk about is that supply channel worked effectively because no one had brought it out right now because they got the kids from all over the place, and especially The Clinton Foundation had such an anchor hold inside of Haiti that nobody watched them or had any kind of oversight over what they were doing. And lastly, you mentioned about how those high-end homes are being entered by burglars and thieves. You know, you mentioned MS-13 because MS-13 right here in Philadelphia are kicking butt and taking names. That's why we have such a high rate of murders inside of Philadelphia. Poverty and crime go hand in hand. So this MS-13 gang group are right now, and I know a lot of gang members who are here. I know a lot of folks who've been a part of the triad, who've been a part of the MS-13. They've been in the prison system, and now they're trying to help others break that habit. So I know some folks are doing something about that MS-13, but they are ruthless. That's why we've had so many execution-style murders in Philadelphia here just recently.
Yeah, all this stuff touches every community. No one is going to be immune. And what's happening now with these stories are coming out. When you see the kinds of numbers dying from the drugs, you see the kind of numbers of homes being invaded, them going after the high-end homes, you know, there's nowhere safe to hide. And these people have no fear. As I said earlier, in Massachusetts, an illegal alien arrested a couple of times, rapes a someone, gets out without bail, gets on an airplane, and leaves, never to be seen again. They have no fear of prosecution. So it's a world where we all have to stop and say what's happening. Now, when we come back, we could touch a little bit on how that's affecting some of the young folks and the way they're looking at things.
I agree with you.
So it's going to be interesting to see where we go from here. Okay. So we've got about 2 minutes left to cover this, and there's some things we're going to cover in the second half. We're going to have an economist join us at 1:30 to talk about some of these great jobs numbers that came out. You know, if we look at what's being said about the economy, we've got an economy that's on fire. You have to stop then and ask yourself, what's driving it, and why does it seem like so many Americans are struggling? What's going on behind the numbers? Because if you look at some of the Wall Street Journal headlines and you watch CNBC, you're hearing a really robust story. And if you look at the stock market numbers and you don't account for inflation, the stock market's on a tear. Now, if you account for inflation, it gets a little more of a question. How much is the stock market really up on an inflation-adjusted basis? That's a separate conversation. But getting to the question of how is the economy doing so well and yet the people in it, in many cases, aren't.
Oh, Gary, that's Bidenomics. Bidenomics, and that's why we have such a, you know, a crazy economy right now. Bidenomics. And he thinks it does something positive when, in fact, it does completely the opposite.
So we'll hit on this a little bit at 1:30 with someone from the Heritage Foundation who's going to call in.
Oh, great.
And we've got some other things to cover, including the discussion in Tennessee about mRNA vaccines and food.
Oh,
so thank you for joining us for this first hour of the Conservative Voice. Come back and join us for the second hour, and we look forward to speaking with you in just about 4 minutes.
I brought to you courtesy.